Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
care.
I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome on in to Bet the Board, Monday Night Football Edition, powered by Bet Online for this NFL Week 14. A very interesting Sunday in the professional ranks, as we saw one contender possibly lose their leader for the remainder of the season, another team rise to the top of the quote-unquote scrap heap, as people had written them off for dead. But to break it all down, we bring in the one, the only, Payne Insider. Payne, did you see anything yesterday you really liked or disappointed, my friend?
It was an interesting week. Not a ton of great performances. Not a ton of great games, I didn't think. But if I had to look at one team that impressed me, I think you have to look at the Redskins. Kirk Cousins did have the one brain fart per usual, but you look at that team as a whole, short week, travel. They did it against pro bettors. The public was obviously on Chicago, but the pro bettors drove that line up from three, close four. And the Skins go out, get their first road win in the season when they needed it most. They continue to control their own destiny in the NFC East. So that was huge. Cousins does have the interception, but goes for 300 yards in some pretty, I don't know, there were some elements out there. There's some weather in that game. Two TDs total. Bears defense had been improving each week. And I thought the defense, did what they needed to do. I know it's kind of been a defense that's been on the decline, but they're a physical defense. And one thing, if you listen around the league to players after having played the Redskins, the common sentiment is this team is extremely physical and they go out there and hit. So huge win for the Redskins, their first road win of the year.
That voice you hear on the other end of this lovely podcast, Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter as well. And if you haven't already done so through the first, 30 episodes of this podcast all season long, subscribe SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at toddstake.com. And Payne, you mentioned the Redskins and their performance and how the professional money did come in on the Bears, driving them out to a four-point favorite. We saw some money on the under as well. Of course, that game just sneaks over the total. But as far as some of the other impressive performances in a somewhat uneventful week, as you described, talking about close games, anybody else, players or teams, catch your eye?
You know, I know they weren't playing a great opponent. And when I went back and watched it, and you hate to say this again, but the Titans had some quit in them. But you have to look at the Jets. They're starting to get healthy, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, the last 3 weeks, this is kind of a guy that he's thrown in the mix on teams when they just are desperate for quarterback play, and he's kind of that hold-you-together-for-a-season-type quarterback. But he's really gone above and beyond that the last 3 weeks during this crunch time phase. 9 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He's on pace for over 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. And when everybody is healthy, with Brandon Marshall, with Eric Decker, with Chris Ivory, this is roughly a top 10 offense. And when you compile that with their defense now getting healthy, and Todd Bowles and Casey Rogers on the defensive side of the ball, this could be a team, if they get into the playoffs, can make some noise with their physical style, their defense, and an offense that kind of keeps the chains moving.
You a little bit surprised that they didn't do a whole lot in the second half yesterday against Tennessee, kind of folded their tents instead of trying to keep that momentum going forward, knowing they have a short week and a road trip into Dallas for a rare Saturday night game?
I think you kind of answered your question there. It's a short week heading into Dallas. What's the need? You know, you're up a ton at halftime. Let's play this game out. We don't need to put too much on tape here. Let's remain healthy. Let's kind of just not go through the motions, but get this game out of the way. We're looking at a Titans team. We can see it in their eyes. I saw it on film, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of effort or energy there in the second half. So it's kind of just one of those play-it-out things. Don't put too much on tape for the short week.
I'm going to go with Payne from an impressive performance standpoint. What we saw Sunday night, and no, it's not to give the Texans full grade for an offensive performance that was downright pathetic, but I think the Patriots defense doesn't get enough credit for how good this unit is. Throughout the telecast, they talk about all the first and second round draft picks that Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia have compiled there. They held Houston to 189 yards, and a lot of that was with a large lead. Brian Hoyer had chances to pick apart the secondary and really neutralize DeAndre Hopkins aside from one big catch. Can we make the case that the Patriots defense is really the engine driving this team's Super Bowl chances going into the last couple of weeks of the regular season?
I think it's pretty funny because when you talk about the New England Patriots in general, everybody thinks Brady, everybody thinks this dynamic offense for the last decade. And really what Bill Belichick is a defensive guru, and he's kind of inherited the opposite approach of Chip Kelly over the last few years, knowing the game plans he's able to install, knowing how good of a defensive mind he is. The defense has kind of been just a mash unit of players over the year that he gets to overachieve. They're cerebral, they're in the right positions, they don't make mistakes, but they haven't had a ton of talent on the defensive side of the ball. And they started to get some of that, especially within the front seven. The cornerbacks, secondary, still a bit questionable. A guy that was making plays for them, huge plays for them last night, was basically taken off the scrap heap of the Tampa Bay roster. And he fills in 1 week and makes some plays. So the secondary, not great. There's some opportunity there. But the front seven, when healthy, is good as anybody in the league.
You made the interesting point earlier in the year that a lot of the casual fans, and maybe our listeners aren't all that familiar with, wondering why DeAndre Hopkins doesn't play a bigger role in that game. But I don't believe there's a team in the league that's more effective neutralizing the primary offensive weapon for a team. And you look at what the Patriots did schematically last night, not using their top cover corner to take DeAndre out of the mix, rolling safety help over the top, using their second corner, and really limiting the downfield threat and the Nate Washingtons of the world, the Ryan Griffins, and everything else this Texans team would like to do, trying to find a big play.
It was a really weird game offensively for the Texans in general, and they do have a nice wide receiving core when healthy, when you can implement Cecil Shorts and Nate Washington as your 2-3 complementing Hopkins on the outside. Early on in that game, they were safety help on Hopkins. Once the game kind of got out of range a little bit, they did go to single coverage. That's when he caught the deep ball, but Hoyer had ample opportunities all night long to stretch the field. He underthrew Washington in the first half. They did kind of make the catch, but Washington should walk in there. In the second half, a lot of the receivers didn't make plays for him. A lot of the tight ends, there was two or three great seam routes 30, 40 yards down the field where the tight end just dropped the ball. So those are some of the things that we saw. Offensively, what I didn't get, and I was kind of going back and forth with a couple guys on this game last night, for whatever reason, when the Texans ran the ball in a normal pro set, they were doing fine. But it was they went to this wildcat. And I know O'Brien was kind of on the staff in 2008 when the Dolphins ran the wildcat to victory. I don't know if he got something in his head, a wild hair up his ass. I don't know what it was that he was just set to be fit with this. I'm going to run the wildcat here. And it just didn't work. The regular ground game was working. So it was very, very interesting. I don't think it was a great called game from O'Brien in the offense there.
Yeah, and the Patriots now in firm control of their own playoff destiny in the AFC. Amazing what 1 week's worth of results will do. When the Bengals lose, the Broncos lose, you win, you go from the third seed to the number one overall. The Texans, of course, a big showdown this weekend with the Indianapolis Colts and major questions, not only for the man who will be under center for the Houston Texans, but will Indianapolis get the services of Andrew Luck back there? And Payne, I want to talk about that Broncos and Raiders game. I don't know if we look at it from a glass half full performance from Oakland's defense and the way they stiffened throughout the second half, or we go that, you know what, Denver's offense just couldn't take advantage of some of the opportunities, because despite the final score and the Raiders winning outright after taking all sorts of sharp money in the market, I mean, this is a team that had 8 first downs, 126 yards of offense, 24 minutes time of possession, and the most glaring stat for Derek Carr and company, 2.3 yards per play.
Yeah, when you look at those numbers, and I'm staring at them right now, not only do you not think you cover a game like that on the road, but you certainly aren't going to win it outright. So I really don't know. I don't even know how to look at this game. When you look in the first half, clearly Oakland kind of buckled down there in the secondary. They've definitely played bend but don't break. Brock Osweiler was in a nice rhythm early on, couldn't punch it in, had a couple drops, even a drop from Demaryius Thomas in the first half. The second half, it was more so Denver imploding. And this was a first week in a long time where that Denver ground game didn't get going. Ronnie Hillman struggled a little bit. They didn't have C.J. Anderson to kind of fall back on. He's kind of taken over a much larger role the last month of the season. But there is room for concern there. I don't want to go as far as saying there's a quarterback debate because I really don't think there is one there. A ton of drops. The receivers just did not give Brock Osweiler any help, whether it was Vernon Davis on that fourth down. Demaryius Thomas was horrible all day long. He is, I don't know, just he got the big contract. I know you're going to look at this, 10 catches in a game like this, but so many crucial drops. So I really don't know what to take from this game. I really don't. You're looking at the Oakland Raiders, 6-7. How they won this week, help from the officials the last week. It'll be interesting to see where this team ends up. Definitely some concern in Denver, but I think they get guys back healthy on the defensive side of the ball. That was huge. They got Sylvester back at defensive tackle. Ware comes back. T.J. Ward looks like he's on his way back as well.
Yeah, and this is a Denver team, clearly, that has a big game of their own this weekend as they'll travel out to Pittsburgh, one of the weekend contests that we'll cover in great detail on the Thursday edition of Bet the Board. Payne, if we look at some of the other games and some nice performances, anything really stick out from the Jaguars' offensive explosion, hanging 51 on the Colts, maybe the Browns' 24-10 quote-unquote dismantling of the 49ers? If we go back to Thursday, a team I think that played better than the final score indicated, had a chance to win a big game on the road, was the Minnesota Vikings with a nice bounce back. Of course, they'll have their hands full this weekend with a divisional foe in the Chicago Bears as well.
I mean, we can gently go over each of those games that you mentioned. I think when you talk about the Browns, Johnny Manziel, it was a nice spark. He did have that one brain fart trying to throw the ball back across the field. Professional bettors were again on Cleveland this week. It'll be interesting to see where they go forward. This is a tough schedule when you're talking about Johnny Manziel and what he can bring to the future. At the Seahawks, at the Chiefs, and against the Steelers the last 3 weeks of the season. We'll see what they're made of. Tough spot, obviously, for the 49ers. Back-to-back weeks on the East Coast for the early start. They did travel back home for whatever reason last week. So I'm not ready to kind of crown the Browns or make Manziel the quarterback of the future. Rewinding all the way to Thursday night, it was a nice performance from Minnesota, something we hadn't seen in a while. Again, Arizona more so didn't have that killer instinct that I saw. And again, it's a team that we've talked about all year long with Arizona. There's just something missing. I can't quite put my finger on it. The defense, not as good as it has been in years past. I'm all for aggression. A little too aggressive on the defensive side of the ball when you have a guy like Bridgewater who's struggling to identify things down the field. Essentially, these kamikaze blitzes where all he has to do is complete a 3-4 yard pass on 3rd and 10 and kind of guys are out of position there. So not ready to make Minnesota as a huge improvement team. So just kind of a quick glaze over those two games that you mentioned.
And as far as teams that put together impressive efforts, there's obviously the other side of the coin, teams that really disappointed. I know this is an area you thrive in. I'm sure you'll have an eloquent rant for some of the stuff that you witnessed yesterday as well.
The thing for me, and I don't know, and I guess it's the entire coaching staff for the Dallas Cowboys. I think that's who I'm going to put it on because you're listening to Jason Garrett's press conference yesterday, and he's saying it's a team effort, their play calling, from the offensive line coach, the offensive coordinator to himself. They kind of get in the room and, diagnose this game plan that they're going to use. I cannot figure out how Matt Cassel threw the ball nearly 30 times in a game that was one possession for 40 minutes. I'll give all the credit into the world. I know there's a new kind of Mike McCarthy took back play calling, and the offense did seem to get things going a little bit more. But the team that rushed for most yards per carry yesterday was the Dallas Cowboys. How Turbin McFadden only had 16 carries in that game is just beyond me. So whoever the hell's calling plays in Dallas needs to look in the mirror and have a major, major kind of reevaluation of what the heck it is they're doing.
Yeah, and if you look at, like you said, you mentioned those carries, the numbers are glaring. Darren McFadden, 9 carries, 111 yards. Now, I know he picked up roughly half of those on a 50-yard run early in the game, which set Dallas up to take the lead. But even if you back that out, the remainder of the game, 8 carries for 61 yards, still a pretty healthy average. Turbin, 7 carries, 51 yards. It's simply mind-boggling that that was the case. Green Bay, of course, broke all sorts of their records for the last 10 years, running for wild with 230-plus against the Cowboys. But, Payne, I wanted to get your thoughts on this Colts team. They've now been blown out back-to-back weeks, and the final score slightly misleading with Jacksonville hanging 51 points on Indy but only gaining 380 yards. Net total, the Colts, 58 yards against Jacksonville. But what do we make of Indianapolis going into one of their biggest games of the season against the Houston Texans on Sunday?
I want to touch on that in just a minute. Let's go back to this Green Bay thing for a minute. 230 rushing yards. Here's some like little stupid notes. 230 rushing yards. That was their most rushing yards in a game in the last 11 seasons. And then the other crazy thing that just blows my mind, that was Robert Turbin's first rushing touchdown of his career. Is that correct? Those are pretty nuts to me, those two numbers. So I just kind of had to throw them out. I saw them, glazed over them. Getting to where you were talking about, what a weird game. And, you know, absolutely, after that second half performance, hanging 42 points, the Jaguars deserve to win that game. But when you look at their season in a full, how they have this many wins is beyond me. I gave them credit for one win against the Dolphins. Everything had kind of gone their way late in games. Just crazy stuff. And this was a game that was looking like they were going to get blown out. I believe it was 13-3 with about a minute to go before the half. The Colts are driving, potentially about to go up 20-3, and this game is as good as dead. And you get this ridiculous defensive touchdown. You get the momentum score before half. One team's going to the locker room dejected. The other team's about to plow through the brick wall head first, and that carried over to the second half. You get the punt return touchdown from my guy from Florida State, and just everything starts to unfold just poorly for the Colts at that point. We talked about this a little bit. I'm not sure if it was with you or with somebody else, but this is just a much different situation where you have a Matt Hasselbeck that's 40 years old. It's one thing to kind of be ready in spot duty. It's another thing. I saw Sunday Night Football. Not only did he look mentally fatigued, but he looked physically fatigued. And now you're preparing for games every single week. It's just a much, much different battle here for Matt Hasselbeck and obviously the Colts.
Yeah, it's clearly a game that now will bear some extra watching. No number posted right now in that Houston-Indianapolis game with so many questions. Payne, a team that disappointed me, and I know it sounds like a broken record because we've filleted them each and every week on the podcast, or so it feels like. The Atlanta Falcons, I mean, a flat-out, I don't want to call it a no-show because I think that doesn't give Carolina credit for what the Panthers level of involvement they had in that domination. But you're talking about 230 yards of offense, a defense that surrendered 7 yards per play, and a game that was essentially over for all intents and purposes by the end of the first quarter. What the hell is going on with the Falcons at this point?
Matt Ryan wasn't very good. The defense, obviously, not very good. And there was a lot of quit out there. There was a what appeared to be some type of little group huddle in the second quarter of that game between the coaches and players when they got down 21-0. And the response that you could kind of see that the players weren't giving the head coach was pretty funny to me. On the flip side of this game, you have to look at what Carolina is doing. You have to look at Cam Newton again, 15 for 21. And when you talk about efficiency, you know, the completion percentage isn't going to be there, but Cam Newton is taking deep, deep shots down the field. And, yes, he's going to drop one or two of them a game, but he's turning Ted Ginn into basically, I don't even want to say, he's turning him into a superstar. Like, nobody can cover Ted Ginn. He's still that fast. And they're just converting these plays down the field. It's pretty crazy to watch. And just throughout those games, we've talked about Cam Newton and some of the passes that he makes. You get a team in second and 20, and you're like, okay, we're going to get off the field here. Second and 20 is like a breeze for Cam Newton. Third and long is a breeze. It's just unbelievable to see what Cam Newton's doing. So I'm going to kind of look at that as a glass half full for the Carolina Panthers, especially when we thought, or there was kind of some rumors out there that Carolina was more focused on the playoffs in the Super Bowl as opposed to the undefeated regular season. There was talks about kind of limiting the workload for Jonathan Stewart. Cam Newton, you know, he was out partying this weekend a little bit, so that performance was a little shocking to me. So, I don't know, they had the division wrapped up, so I kind of was more impressed with the Carolina Panthers than I was kind of what we know what the Atlanta Falcons have been the last few weeks, although that did not stop me from being invested in the Falcons.
The Panthers continue to go out there and put together healthy numbers and line the pockets of backers for them from an ATS perspective, being one of the best bets week in, week out of this 2015 football season so far. For me, Payne, the 49ers offensive line, no idea how you surrender 9 sacks to the Cleveland Browns. I don't think I want to go into a huge diatribe there. But maybe you can explain to me what the hell is going on in Tampa. You have everything to play for, and that effort against New Orleans can only be described as pathetic and flat. I mean, there was absolutely no pop offensively. Defensively, I guess Tampa was okay. Again, weren't able to get off the field, average over 6 yards per carry on the ground. But for a Tampa team looking to turn the corner and stay relevant in the NFC playoff race, they let a glorious opportunity slip through their fingers.
This was the one team that I specifically wrote down for being a disappointment. And I hate to put the Bucs in that category because I think the season's been a success as a whole. They're going to win more games this season than the last two combined. There's talent out there. There's signs of improvement. I think most of that can be attributed to Jameis Winston, obviously. He gives you that hope. He gives you a chance basically every week. They've already eclipsed their win total, so that's a positive from the betting element. So there's lots of positive there. But when you drop a game at home to an undermanned Saints team that's kind of struggled away from home and on grass as long as Sean Payton and Drew Brees have been together in New Orleans, it's a tough loss to stomach. You kind of just wonder what if. What if Lovie Smith wasn't the coach in Tampa and what they could have potentially done this season with a guy that had a pulse. I know a lot of guys weren't expecting things out of Tampa quite this early, but, man, there is a lot of talent on that side of the offensive ball. They got to get the offensive line a little bit better. They drafted 2 guys this year early on, so hopefully that rectifies some issues there. But this was a huge, huge loss. And now, you know, traveling on a short week, it'll be interesting to see what they have left in the tank after losing a game like that.
And one other game, I'm not sure if we'll go glass half full, glass half empty. Clearly the major injury result, Andy Dalton lost for 4 to 6 weeks with a broken thumb for the Cincinnati Bengals. Cue up the band, the A.J. McCarron era will start in earnest a lot sooner than Cincinnati fans would like. But did you see anything there, either good from the Steelers, bad from their defense, good from the Bengals, that you think will be useful moving forward with either of those teams very much in the thick of the AFC playoff picture?
Well, I think the glass half empty thing from this game is, man, I am a little disappointed we didn't pull the trigger on the Patriots at 5-1 to win the Super Bowl. I don't think there's going to be much in their way in the AFC. I really don't at this point. They're going to start getting healthy. We've talked about that defense. So that's my glass half-empty look at that game. But I don't know where you look when you're the Bengals. I mean, I don't know if they were going to be a huge player anyways. I really don't. I think the defense was a little overrated. When you have Andy Dalton as your quarterback, you know, you hate to say that injury was his fault, but it was his fault. Throw the damn ball into the ground. A.J. McCarron, he looked okay. He looked like he's going to be able to do enough to still have them win the North Division. The pick six was more of a timing issue than it being just a horrific throw, more of a chemistry issue. He did go out there. He looked competent. He threw for over 250 yards. He connected with A.J. Green deep down the field. So I think in the short term, they're going to do enough to hold on to that division. But in the playoffs, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's the Bengals. I don't think they're going to do anything with Dalton long term. I don't know if they're going to do anything long term with A.J. McCarron.
Well, the Bengals provide an excellent segue into our look-ahead lines and some of that discussion. For those folks not sure what they're listening to, it is the Bet the Board podcast with Payne Insider. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there at Todd Furman. And, of course, always subscribe SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at toddstake.com. Allows you to get this podcast immediately after we record it and get it uploaded. Bengals, Payne, as we talked about, were a 7-point favorite on the look-ahead number for their trip out to Northern California to take on the 49ers. That number, I think a lot of people will be surprised by, to see only a 3-point adjustment for Andy Dalton's absence. The Bengals, of course, still road favorites, but now a 4-point chalk with San Francisco returning home off that back, after that 2-game road trip.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we will potentially be making a case for San Francisco here. It's very early in the week. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do it. Want to dig into a few more things. Obviously, you know, back-to-back trips to the East Coast or San Francisco. A lot of travel for them the last couple weeks. A.J. McCarron, again, as I alluded to, did show some signs. He'll be taking all the snaps at practice this week. You would think the chemistry gets there a little bit more with the wide receivers. But, you know, huge move at this point. Instead of, you know, 7 on the look ahead, you're looking at 4, potentially, you know, 3.5. Be interested to see where this line goes, but not much for me early in the week at this point.
Now, the biggest look-ahead change that we've seen based on 1 week's worth of results taking place in northern Florida, where the Jacksonville Jaguars and Atlanta Falcons on the look-ahead number, you were talking about a pick 'em. Now the Jags, a field goal favorite in some spots, including BetOnline, even some 3.5 out there in the market. And I guess it begs the question, is this finally a buy-low opportunity for Atlanta? Or how would we begin to try and go about processing what we saw from very disparate results from these two teams a week ago?
Again, I think this is a big takeaway point for handicapping the rest of the way. Kind of throw out some of your power numbers. It's the time of year where the math guys tend to struggle. You have to do your reading this time of year. You have to see who wants to be there. You have to see who's kind of mailed it in, and that's going to be the key with this game. Clearly, by numbers metrics, 3.5 is a large number here. But from the handicapping standpoint, you're going to have to do your reading. You're going to have to see if Atlanta cares anymore. We know that this is a huge game for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You don't want to throw away what you did this past week against the Colts. So, again, every single game from this point forward for the Jaguars is must win. You know, if you get a W there, one of your division rivals is going to be getting a W as well, having played each other. So they're going to have to win out here, and that's kind of something that you're going to have to look at, capping this game from a who-wants-to-be-there standpoint and not necessarily what your power number dictates.
Now, obviously, on Monday night, we have a game that would be the exact opposite of must-win, but we did see a change in the market. New Orleans, a 1.5-point chalk on the look-ahead number. That number has ballooned out to a full field goal as they play host to the Detroit Lions. I know the Rams and Lions game was one that we talked about on this podcast, and neither of us took the position despite getting the number we were looking for at 3. But I think it goes for folks that are wondering what prompted that line move. That was some of the sharpest money out there that came in on Thursday in multiple waves that took Detroit from a pick'em on the road into that road favorite role against the St. Louis Rams.
Got as high as 3.5, and there was some significant sharp vibe there. It closed 3 even. So there was some money taking back the Rams at some good numbers there. This becomes an obviously interesting Monday night game, and I think the best thing that could have happened for the Lions happened. I mean, the Hail Mary sucks, I get it, but it's a good loss. Last week, it's a good loss. Blow the thing up, start over. God forbid Jim Caldwell kind of gained momentum and there was talks about bringing him back. The guy's a dumpster fire. So positive news that the Lions have lost the last 2 weeks. This game here in general, clearly, New Orleans hasn't quit on the season yet. A lot of good fight. We know what their home field advantage brings in the primetime spot. So the look-ahead line, you know, potentially a little short. You're looking at 3 here. I don't have a ton on this game at this point. Something I'm going to want to look into, one specific thing. And we're not going to go into great detail because we'll be back here next Monday talking about this very game.
Yep, no doubt about it. Folks can get a more in-depth breakdown at the same time next week. As we'll preview the Lions Saints. And one last game from a look-ahead standpoint, Payne, Kansas City continues to keep this freight train on the tracks, got derailed from an against-the-spread standpoint, only mustering 10 points against the Chargers, a game we didn't really cover in the glass-half-full, glass-half-empty portion of the show. But you're looking at Kansas City going from a 5-point chalk on the road against Baltimore, now a 7.5-point favorite. Of course, the big question that the Ravens will have to answer is, will it be Matt Schaub out there under center taking snaps, or will we see Jimmy Clausen making his second start in black and purple?
I thought I'd never see the day where I'm clamoring for Matt Schaub, but if he's in there and it's 7.5, you know, probably a decent little wager, but we'll see who is in at quarterback. You'll have to monitor that situation closely. Not sure I want anything to do with Jimmy Clausen. So a game that you will have to definitely monitor, but your typical buy low, sell high game here.
And as we look at it, clearly the issue yesterday for the Ravens was the fact they couldn't run the football at all, put a lot of pressure on Clausen. He did turn it over once. Stat line a little bit misleading for a team that couldn't get into double digits for offense. Payne, before we get to the Monday night preview of your beloved Dolphins playing host to the Giants, anything movie-wise that really got you going this past week? I do have to admit, I begrudgingly went to see Creed. I know I took a lot of shit for it from podcast listeners. How can you not be a Rocky fan? How can you not appreciate what this movie series has done? I watched Creed, came out of there pleasantly surprised. I thought it was a damn good movie.
I appreciate you dumbing it down for the rest of us common folks and our listeners out there. I really do.
Oh, boy.
Shots fired a good early on this Monday morning. Sam, I might need you to come to my defense.
I'm not going to take that out either.
I thought it was a good movie. I was pleasantly surprised. I did think the fight scene at the end a bit corny. I thought Sylvester Stallone had one of his best acting performances in.
Well, hold on, that's not really saying a whole lot.
I know, but he stepped it up. He brought the C plus game, whatever he has left in the tank for this effort, and I thought it was very good. I see IMDb rating it at 8.6 out of 10. I think that's probably a bit facetious. It's a large step there. I didn't think it was that great. Clearly will be a part two that I will be going to see. That was a good movie.
I mean, you give every movie that we see and review on this podcast an 8.2. So for you to say that this one was overrated, it catches me a little bit off guard.
I wouldn't go that far. But yes, it's not a 9 out of 10. I mean, that's kind of what we're bordering on here. Clearly not a 9 out of 10. But it was a good movie. It'll get the, Rocky series kind of back underway. Not a huge fan of Michael B. Jordan, but, he's not bad. A lot of people will remember him from the Friday Night Lights series. So, it was definitely a worthwhile watch, especially if you're a sports fan.
Did you guys catch the meme, by the way? It's a picture of Dolph Lundgren holding his fist up, and it says, "The MF-er that killed Apollo had the nerve to show up at the Creed premiere."
I did not see that, but that's pretty funny.
No, I didn't see that, but what I did see, which added a little authenticity to the Creed movie, was when they went through training, Jordan was actually knocked unconscious when he hit the canvas. So I got to tip my hat to a guy who gets in the role and goes to that extent to know what it's like to take a punch.
Yeah, I think if you've read some of the interviews, he was saying that this was almost a full 18-month prep in the gym to get his body Todd Furman-like for this movie.
I mean, a lot of people try and put that kind of commitment in, Payne, when they're going there lifting weights. They're taking those early spin classes. They're going to yoga to get their mind right.
Spin classes.
They're going to yoga to get their mind right to deal with you twice a week during football season. So, it says an awful lot about the expectations and what you have to do during this NFL grind that goes on for 20-plus weeks. And for one team that it's really been a grind, Payne, it has been the Miami Dolphins. Get a chance in prime time to get back in the win column against a good opponent, see if they can carry some of that momentum from last weekend's game through. You've seen money come in both ways on this one. The number got as high as 2.5. Right now we're looking at a pick'em at Bet Online total on this thing at 47. I guess Dolphins injury concerns, are the Giants even worthy of being considered for that road chalk roll? And more importantly, is this going to feel like a Giants home game down there in South Florida when they, knowing that Miami doesn't exactly get the best fan turnout?
This is one of the tougher games to handicap. I really do. And I think we have seen, and I'm not saying we, I should say I have seen, sharp money come in on both sides of this game with real position. So there's some discrepancy as to who a lot of sharp bettors like in this game. When you break it down kind of from a historical standpoint, this is kind of the spot where the Giants have kind of flourished the last few seasons, on the road. This is not a spot where the Dolphins have flourished at home. When you look at some of these teams, the Dolphins, clearly not as good as their 5-7 record. Their last two wins, they were at Philadelphia. They were outgained by 150 yards. Last week against the Ravens in Matt Schaub, they were outgained by 160 yards. So they're getting wins there, clearly not as good as their 5-7 record. The Giants, they're just not a very good football team either. So this is a very, very tough game for me to handicap. Thought Juwan James at right tackle could potentially come back for the Dolphins this week. Not going to be the case. So you get Jason Fox again at right tackle. He's been pretty much abused. But the Giants don't really have a huge pass rush. So this is really a tough game for me, especially even when you look at the total. What is going to be the direction of the offense for the Miami Dolphins? They get their new play caller. Very ground heavy last week. So I know I've seen some over money come in this game, but if you're going to have kind of an offensive game plan where you're going to run the ball 25 times, that's exactly what Dan Campbell wants to do, it's going to be tough to go over a number like this.
Yeah, I think when you try and figure out, obviously the casual bettor is going to walk to the window knowing what the Giants have at stake, needing to keep pace with the Redskins and Eagles, who both won over the weekend, explains why we're seeing about 70% of the action coming in on the road team at this current juncture. The bigger issue here, I mean, I won't call it an issue, but I know the books are going to be rooting for the Dolphins. It was not one of their better Sundays, losing the two biggest decisions they had of the day with the standalone time slot essentially last night on the New England Patriots, and then a big result for Green Bay, knowing they were tied into every moneyline parlay and teaser. And while you hate to insinuate the fact that books typically get healthy and don't get beat up too bad, it has been a banner season for them. Would not shock me in the least if this ended up being the worst weekend with a Giants cover.
Yeah, Giants cover would absolutely decimate the books. We have seen, you know, a pretty significant position early this morning from one group. This did get as high as the Giants -2.5. You could have the Dolphins to that key number +3 on a bye. A couple guys did that. And when you're looking at the bet splits, you nailed it. You're looking at nearly almost 80-20 splits right now at Sports Insights. So this number coming down closer to a pick 'em at this point, I'm not really sure on this game. It's just so tough for me because I know what the Dolphins truly are. This is not a good football team, but it is Monday Night Football. For whatever reason, Dan Campbell has been a player coach. The guys really like him, so the effort has been there as bad as they are. And there are some rumblings that they want Dan Campbell to be that guy. And to be that guy, they're going to have to finish the season 500. And so it is a Monday Night Football game. This is kind of the spot where when there's not a lot to play for, you do see huge efforts from teams. And one matchup thing here, when you look at this this Dolphins defense, it has not obviously been great in the secondary. When you look at the Giants, who do they really have aside from Odell Beckham Jr.? And one thing, Grimes does struggle against the physical receiver, but the guy that tries to out-athlete him, there's not many guys who can do that. So I'm not sure how nuts Beckham Jr. goes against Grimes. You'd think he would shadow him around the field. So for me, this is just a really tough game. There has been significant over money on this game, but again, for me, this Dolphins offense, they're struggling moving the ball. And again, you're going to get most likely a lot of ground and pound in this game. So that makes it tough for me to like a side or a total here. I know it's not what people want to hear, but I'm probably not going to be invested in this game at all.
There's nothing wrong with passing when the opportunity doesn't provide itself. I will say I did get an interesting email from one of our listeners, Payne, who asked last Monday how come I couldn't openly endorse a play on the Cowboys after having used them in my super contest entry. Similar scenario here. Full disclosure that I'm sitting on Dolphins for the fifth game of the week trying to go to 3-2, but won't actually have a financial investment as things sit as we record this podcast about 8 a.m. Pacific time on Monday. Just the information changes. You look to try and take advantage of some of the opportunities that are out there in those contests. And oftentimes you don't have to walk to the window with a ticket on some of those teams. I know a lot of people slightly confused figuring that folks like yourself and I who participate in those things have five games. We may not very well bet into all those numbers that are available.
Yeah, absolutely not. And when it comes to contests, especially this late in the season, a lot of it is strategic-oriented games that we're not actually playing, but games that we know we cannot put on our cards versus games that we think will give us more than a potential one-game swing going against some of what we would think would be, you know, plays that are used a lot in the contest. So it's a lot of strategy as opposed to, you know, real positions that we're using in contests this late in the year. So for me, I think, again, you're going to see pro money on the Dolphins. I'm not running to bet them, but you did make note of one good point here. The Dolphins in general, not a huge home field advantage in a week like this, where there's just so many New Yorkers down here. You're looking probably at a 50-50 crowd split. So there's literally no home field advantage here to even factor in this game.
And, of course, the other option always available to loyal listeners, if you're not already signed up at BetOnline, plenty of live options available for you there, halftime wagering. You don't have to go into every primetime game with a wager pre-kickoff. You can look for things to play out and try and identify a little bit of opportunity. We'll be right back with you again on Thursday for the NFL Week 15. Man, don't know where the season has gone, Payne, as we preview some of the big games. A lot of intrigue. The Denver-Pittsburgh game clearly going to catch our eye. The Arizona-Philadelphia major implications in the NFC as well. But before we close up shopping, any final words of advice for our loyal listeners and then we'll steer them in the right direction as best we can later this week.
Yeah, you know, nothing crazy at this point in the week. Still a lot of games off the board. Still a lot of quarterback situations to be sorted out. So, you know, this is kind of the first week in a long time we have not, you know, done anything early on in the week. So I think we'll have more in-depth stuff on Thursday for our loyal listeners.
And for those college football fans, I know we promised you an announcement. Mark your calendars about 2 weeks from today, maybe 15 days. We will have our bowl podcast covering some of the bigger games. We won't go in depth to all 40 of them. Of course, some of them will have been played by the time we record, like some of our colleagues in the industry. But we'll at least offer some thoughts and sentiments on the biggest games to get you in a holiday mindset to try and profit from some college football's biggest contest. And Payne, if schedules allow, we may have a couple big guests that we're going to bring in to help us break down those games.
There you go. Tease it. Tease it.
So we do what we can. We do expect our producer, Sam, to atone for his Stanford pick against Notre Dame to close out the regular season. So we know he'll come in armed and ready to feed a few winners. But in the meantime, best of luck with Monday Night Football for all of our Bet the Board loyal listeners. Giants going on the road to take on the Dolphins. Subscribe to our podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at ToddSteak.com. We're Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. Best of luck tonight, and we'll see you at the window.